Welcome to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland. Featuring stimulating in-depth interviews with special guests from all areas of the arts. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Copeland.
Welcome to the show where we balance the intellectual with the creative, exploring whether we have more in common than divides us through thought-provoking conversations. For the topic hour, I go out and about and talk to people on the street about a wide variety of different topics that affect us all, both locally and globally. And for this, the arts hour, I interview local, national and international guests from all areas of the arts. The show combines a debate topic with an arts interview because I feel discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways we engage with the world. This week, as my special guest from the arts, I'm pleased to be interviewing rapper, singer and writer Dessa. I'm going to be playing a few tracks from Dessa's album Chime, as well as talking to her. And to start, I'd like to play a short kind of musical monograph written about herself called Shrimp, which is from her album Chime, released in February this year.
I'm high-strung, universal donor. That's type A, type O. To wake up, calm down, or shape up. Chai-ti, tai-ti, type O. No easy money. I'm trying to get rich slow. Standing on the acorn I planted, I trusted oak trees grow. ENFP Myers-Briggs, 6'2 with my highest kicks. Hero to the neighbor's kid. Dolled up, I'm the baddest person. Still like backpacks over purses. Hate the Q's or twos in cursive. Talk real fast when I get nervous. Rap real fast, but that's on purpose. I've single-handed some duets. I've been as bad as good girls get, but I don't regret too much just yet. I mostly gave more than I got. Tried not to watch the ticking clock, like always a bridesmaid, never an astronaut.
Okay.
I think it's a great track. I particularly like the lines, I'm trying to get rich slow and as bad as a good girl gets. Well, Dessa graduated with a BA in philosophy from the University of Minnesota, and as well as having a successful solo music career, is also a member of Doomtree, a hip-hop collective. Dessa has landed on the Billboard Top 200 list as a solo artist, as a Doomtree member, and as a contributor to the Hamilton mixtape, which reached number one on the Billboard charts. As a writer, she's contributed to the New York Times Magazine, NPR, the Star Tribune, Minnesota Monthly, literary journals across the country, and has published two short collections of poetry and essays. Dessa has a book coming out in September called My Own Devices, True Stories from the Road on Music, Science and Senseless Love. The publisher, Penguin Random House, observes, Dessa defies category. She is an academic with an international rap career, a lyrical writer fascinated by behavioral science, and a funny, charismatic performer dogged by blue moods and a perseverant case of heartache. She's currently on tour and will be in Santa Cruz, if you're listening in this area, at the Rio Theatre on Saturday, May 5th. Welcome to the show, Dessa.
Hey, thank you for having me.
I'm wondering if you can remember, I mean, your life's just sort of so embedded in the arts. The first time that art of any kind, whether it was music or visual art or a book, had a deep effect on you when you realized perhaps that art had a power just beyond entertainment.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, I remember my dad was a really big Beatles fan. And so we had that music on a lot. It's from like the White Album and Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club. And I don't know that this was the moment where I felt most moved, but I remember learning that art operated under this different rules and regulations than the rest of the world seemed to. When I was listening to that song 8 Days a Week. I love you. And I had learned recently how many days are the week. And so I told my mom, that's wrong. And she said, well, no, he's saying that he loves her so much that he needs. And so she's explaining the metaphor to me. And I remember just kind of my worldview reeling a little bit that adults could intentionally say something that was untrue for effect.
Right.
You know, essentially, essentially learning about the world of figurative language and being able to peer through. I don't know. It was just exciting universe that wasn't fact-based. And it had never occurred to me that there might be an alternate universe.
Interesting. Would you say you grew up in a creative environment, or did you sort of find art for yourself? You said your parents played music a lot.
Yeah. My father was a musician. He was a lutenist. So he would play the lute and classical guitar. Before I was born, that was how he made his living. And then after he had kids, he became a glider pilot.
But
kind of an unlikely career path.
Yeah.
But he played around the house, and my mom had a really world-class voice. I knew then that it was very beautiful that she sang beautifully, because she could sing really hard songs, Whitney Houston and the like, you know, by real kind of diva singers.
Yes.
But it was only in my adulthood that I, after having known a lot of singers and making my living as a singer and a rapper now, that I recognize how truly exceptional her voice was, yeah.
Right. And when did you start really, you know, singing and rapping, and what you know, why did you start rapping particularly?
Yeah, well, after having graduated from college, I would have loved to have set off on a literary career, but I wasn't gaining any purchase in that world. You know, I'd submit essays to the New Yorker or other fancy publications with New York addresses, and not hear back, or hear back 6 months later with a form letter. So I had been attracted to writing, but it hadn't occurred to me to do it in a performative sense. I wasn't a kid who was in like theater or choir or band. But yeah, I was kind of a loner, depressive stoner for most of high school. So it was after a bad breakup that a roommate said, I think you should go to a poetry slam and you should like read or perform one of those essays that you write. And I did. And I won. Unbeknownst to me, the really good poets were out of town that day, which is why I won. But
time and place. It's, you know.
Exactly. And it was, I needed other people to be in another place for that one win to happen. And so I got into the slam theme. And it was through there that I ended up meeting the members of my rap collective, Doomtree. You know, at that point in time, like the hip hop scene and the poetry scene intersected quite a bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think writing lyrics, depending on how you write the lyrics, my own opinion is that lyric writing has degraded a lot in recent years. But, you know, if good lyric writing is very close to poetry. I mean, you know, Bob Dylan, you know, getting the Nobel Prize for his lyrics. I mean, whether you agree with that or not, you know, it is very close to poetry. And of course, rap, even more so, because there's so many more words. I could really see, you know, them intersecting like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for me, the word count is a big deal. You know, it's like if you were for someone who's interested in language and writing.
Yeah.
To try to write a song with as many words as a rap track usually has. You know, you'd end up with a 9-minute song. It just takes too long. So, and also just in rap, the conventions of the form, wordplay is really, really highly prized. You know, a really good double entendre, a really clever turn of phrase. That's what rap like runs on. So in that way, it's a really good fit for someone, I think, who's primarily interested in language.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, for me, language has a real rhythm. I mean, obviously, you know, if you look at Shakespeare, it actually does have a rhythm, you know, and poetry. But, you know, even prose writing has a rhythm. And of course, rap, you know, is much more embedded, you know, with the beat than other, you know, music, or more so than other music.
I mean, in some ways, it is like you're part writer and part drum. You know, I mean, the percussiveness is what makes it interesting. You know, a really simplistic rhyme scheme sounds like a nursery rhyme, not like a rap song, you know, because part of what makes rap interesting is pattern, you know, are the like percussive patterns of the lyrics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what motivated you to do this professionally, you know, rather than just as, you know, a very interesting hobby?
It never even occurred to me to do it as a hobby.
Right.
To be honest, yeah, I think I mean, my dad, being very much a creative type, he told us, both me and my little brothers, since we were little, you know, find something that you love and then try to find someone to pay you for it. So for me, I think if I wasn't able to get this particular dream up and running, I probably would have picked like another passion and tried to get that one up and running. But for me, doing music and writing integrates so completely, I guess, into the way that I spend my all of my time.
Yeah.
That there isn't really a hobby. I don't have.
No.
Does that make sense? Like, I don't have hobbies, because if I have free time, I'll go do something that feels purposeful and exciting. And for me, that's music, which happens to be my job. So
yeah.
Yeah. It's all kind of a whole. Like, the people I know and hang out with are the same people I make music with or work with. So,
yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's a real gift, I think, you know, when your parents have that approach of sort of saying, find something you love and get paid for it. You know, I think that's not as common as one would hope. And I know also I watched you gave this wonderful commencement speech for the University of Minnesota, which I recommend listeners to go and look for on YouTube. And I think you said your father, his advice when you said you wanted to do music was keep your overhead low. And I thought that was great. You know, you could say it sounds obvious, but it really isn't. And I think particularly it's so easy today to feel you need, you know, all these devices and this and that, you know, the latest whatever. And but that frees you up so much, doesn't it? If you can, have a simpler
life.
Yeah.
Well, if you can, you know, for me, it comes back to time, you know, and maybe because I'm a little like morbid and I know I've been kind of death obsessed as a kid. I've just been really aware that like, that's the one thing that I can't beg, borrow or steal. You know, it's fixed. That's a fixed resource in my life. And so the less of it that I have to spend doing things that are either unpleasant or feel futile, the more of it that I get to spend in ways that are enjoyable or feel purposeful. And so usually when you're starting out as an artist, for most of us, I think you don't have like a job that feels contributive and purposeful and fun. You know, you have a job where you're serving tables and maybe with people you really like, but you have to spend fewer hours at the restaurant. If you don't buy new boots every week and a half, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'd like to play the track Good Grief from your album Chime. Can you tell us a bit about what inspired this track?
Yeah, I had been flipping through social media and I saw the phrase Good Grief. And because I saw it in writing, I guess, I just, something about it announced itself and or asked to be analyzed. I just thought, what on earth would good grief be? You know, it's like that's the best head wound ever. It just like nothing about grief is good. I thought. And so I started thinking about the way that we usually romanticize pain when it's in the rear view mirror, or sometimes when we're in the throes of it. It's like you hope that it will lead to something, that it will make you better, that it'll be worth it in the end, because it's even more demoralizing to imagine that grief is just grief, right? That this is just simple pain.
So
I wrote a song about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Okay, great. Well, let's hear that now. This is Good Grief from Dessa's album Chime.
I got snow in my pockets, went down again head first. Lace drill bits to my point shoes, pirouette through the hardwood to pay dirt. Night falls, day breaks, time has a funny kind of violence, and I'm trying to keep in mind it can't leave you the way it finds you.
Good grief.
I've heard people say it, what a phrase, what a state to be in, but I don't know where they go to get that feeling. And my knees stay clean, not much for praying. I do my own stunts and my own saving, but there's something I miss, something I've been missing.
Maybe
there's good grief, but how can enough. Well, usually it is. And the air got a little rough. Took out the fuselage, the engine, and both wings. But I'm willing to work for this. Just show me what it did. And I'm ready to hurt for this. I know exactly what this is.
Good grief.
I want that good grief. The one that heals me. That leaves me clarified by fire when I'm burned clean. Tempered by light and heat. Ah, by the dead of morning, I'll be better for it. And then fortified, I'll rise. Bust the hive and meditation champagne. Wings are broken, but I feel no pain. It's real today. I know this feeling that I'm in.
They say there's good grief. But how can you tell it from the bad? Maybe it's only in fact. Good grief's the one that's in your past. They say there's good grief. But how can you tell it from the bad? Maybe it's only in fact. Good grief's the one that's in your past.
And secrets don't like to be kept on mine. Jumped over the fence, I guess. I should be upset, but I'm in my nightgown on the lawn. Thinking better that they're gone. I've been afraid of this so long. It's a relief when it falls wrong. Cause I'm here now. And death can melt me down. Recast me, burn me clean. Like glass from sand.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my guest, rapper, singer and writer, Dessa. We just heard the track Good Grief from her album Chime. And just a reminder, if you're listening in the Santa Cruz area, Dessa will be in Santa Cruz at the Rio Theatre on Saturday, May 5th. Otherwise, check online for other stops on her tour. We're going to a break now, but join me for more conversation after these messages.
Do you like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com.
No white horses to play the game. And I wish I knew your name. Something about you in the rain. Did I or didn't I say it's forever? Well, I know I said it, babe, it just goes nowhere. Well, we can do the things we want. We can do the things we like. But if we're taking all the time, well, I just don't think that it's right. Just that. I think that there's more to us than just that.
It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com.
Bookshop Santa Cruz has been an independent bookseller for over half a century in the community we love. Visit Bookshop Santa Cruz downtown. We love our customers and the books that make it all possible. Bookshop Santa Cruz, online and in downtown Santa Cruz.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my guest, rapper, singer, and writer, Dessa. We heard from Bookshop Santa Cruz in the break, and they have a regular program of wonderful authors appearing to discuss and sign their books. And coming up on May 8th at 7 p.m, best-selling author Christopher Moore returns to the store for a reading and signing of his thrilling new book, Noir. Think Raymond Chandler meets Damon Runyon with more than a dash of Bugs Bunny and the Looney Tunes All-Stars. It's all very, very noir. It's a free event at Bookshop Santa Cruz, 7 p.m. May 8th. You can reserve your spot in the signing line when you pre-order a copy of Noir from Bookshop Santa Cruz. On May 10th, there's a hilarious evening with David Sedaris at Santa Cruz Civic Auditorium. And then on May 11th, White House photographer Pete Souza is appearing also at the Santa Cruz Civic Auditorium to talk about his latest bestseller, Obama, An Intimate Portrait, which features a foreword by the president himself and over 300 photos ranging from the Situation Room to candid family portraits. And tickets must be bought in advance for that. So you can visit bookshopsantacruz.com for more information on both the Pete Souza and David Sedaris event and also Christopher Moore. Well, back to my guest this week, Dessa. You've said about Chime that you've headed into new territory as a songwriter in service of being more fully yourself. Can you tell us a bit about how you wanted to be yourself, influence this album?
Oh, I think on some of my previous records, I was hyper aware of the reasons that I might be dismissed. And I spent some energy on the critics. So I think in a lot of jobs, for a while, you're worried about proving that you should be there. You're worried about demonstrating your skill of being taken seriously and the like. And that is part of my current songwriting process too. I write serious songs. I work hard on the lyrics to get them, tighten them phrasing wise to really craft interesting metaphors, all the attention that a writer would spend on their stuff. But I'm also like a human being, I'm goofy and I hadn't really incorporated that part of my personality on an album before. I guess it hadn't occurred to me to. And so when a friend, after hearing the song that you played at the beginning of the show, when they heard that song Shrimp, they went, "Oh, finally, that sounds like you." And I went, "What?" And they said, "Well, it just sounds, like when we hang out. I mean, that sounds like more like you on this record, and it's nice." And I thought, gosh, I hadn't even realized that unthinkingly how much editing I had been doing, right? That you imagine that a certain part of your personality might not be appropriate for expression. Yeah, and it made me wonder, well, what else have I not been incorporating that might be a candidate for interesting song fodder too?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think, for a lot of us, part of, once you're an adult, the journey is to find your way back to your authentic self. For a lot of people, because of experiences they've had or because of pressures from society or whatever it might be. I think it's interesting that you're exploring that more in this album. Definitely.
I think also, at least at this point in my life, I'm finding that the kind of file folder in my head about who I was is just dated.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know if I still like all that stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
It makes me just kind of want to do like a quick inventory, count everything again and see where the numbers are. And, you know, as your tape change slowly, I think sometimes they can drift away from you without you having made an update to your operating system and your own self-concept.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's really true. And I think, you know, if you are somebody who's a continuous learner, which it seems clear to me you are, then that is going to be the case. You know, if you're continuously growing through your life, then you are going to be the same, but not the same.
Yeah.
Previous guest of the show, indie rapper icon Merce, talks about educated street music for the educated street movement. And the idea that dumb is cool is so pervasive in our society, and also that somehow if you use your intelligence, it means you're elitist as well as uncool. And this idea bleeds into popular music. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this and how it might influence your own music.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's a lot. First of all, Merce is awesome. That's so cool that you have on the show. Well, I think it's complicated in that, you know, my mother's Puerto Rican, but my skin is easily fair enough that I look Caucasian completely.
Mm.
So I'm working in a field that was, you know, pioneered, championed by marginalized communities, right? You know, mostly by people of color.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things that I'm careful of is when somebody says something like, "Oh, Desi, I picked up your recent CD. I don't like rap because it's regressive, you know, or all they talk about is cars and money.
Yeah.
I like your stuff though, because it's smart." I mean, that's a compliment that just isn't factually supported, because I'm not the, I learned how to make thoughtful rap music from people of color,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
who've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm aware of the fact that while there is, I think, a regrettable strain of consumerism and kind of drivel that can overwhelm a lot of pop music stations.
Yeah.
That in some way, I think, as consumers, you and me and everyone else, you know, we can do a better job of lifting up and celebrating some of the awesome stuff that's going on too. And obviously there's room for a silly, stupid pop song that's just catchy and nonsense and raps about being at the club. Like, there's room for that.
Yes.
But that can't be the only thing that there's room for.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Or that it's superior or whatever, you know, I mean, making a value judgment on whether something fun is, you know, better or more cool than something more thoughtful.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fascinating, well, at least fascinating to me, book, The Chalice and the Blade by Rhianne Eisler. I don't know if you're familiar with it. And she, you would really like it, I think. She talks about a partnership model for society versus a dominator model. The book's a lot about how 5,000 to 7,000 years ago, there's a lot of archaeological evidence that shows that societies in Europe were living really peacefully, with, you know, no sort of fortifications, no weapons, and they were living in a very, you know, partnership, men and women mode. So the book is about, you know, how we've, after they were kind of taken over by the hordes, that we've been sort of subsequently in this dominator model for a long time now. And obviously working with the Doomtree Collective, you're using a partnership model that's been successful for many years.
Mm.
However, generally and historically, the genre of rap and hip hop has promoted a sort of dominator model. I mean, not all of it, you know, as we were talking about the other subject also, you know, but a kind of dog eat dog, might is right, everyone out for themselves, men with a higher status than women, you know, conflict resolved through aggression. I'm wondering how you see the genre evolving and your own place within that evolution.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, you know, hip hop is so involved and includes so much music, so many varied.
Yeah, it's hard to generalize.
A little, yeah. You know, it's not a monolithic culture because it's had the time to develop and fracture and develop, you know, tributaries that think really differently potentially from one another. But I will say that Yes, I think that I'm of mixed mind. Like, yes, there is like an aggression, and you do have references, obviously, in a lot of popular rap songs to gratuitous violence.
Yes.
On the other hand, I mean, when you talk about conflict resolution, like, there could be no more peaceable way than to two people to decide to battle
yeah.
with words.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? As,
yes.
as opposed to engaging with one another physically, right? Like the
yeah.
idea that you could publicly resolve an argument by sparring in rhyme.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of cool.
That's a nonviolent
yeah.
solution.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when you were announcing like the book readings coming up, I mean, there's like a noir element to this genre, right?
Yeah.
But sometimes I think we presume too readily that it is all nonfiction, whereas we don't presume when Quentin Tarantino puts out a movie like you are this morally bankrupt person who's actually, you know, arming people with samurai swords, you know.
Right.
We know that it's fiction. But
yeah.
when a black man stands on stage and raps about similar scenes, I think we all jump to the conclusion that this guy might be really doing it, or there's just
yeah.
more dangerous to this fiction. There's more
right.
danger in here.
Yeah.
yeah. So.
Yeah.
I'm of mixed mind. Like, I
yeah.
think that it's not the case that an artist can say, hey, it's just art, and thereby get off the hook for
yeah.
conversations about moral responsibility. Like, dude, you're hurting culture.
Yeah.
Let's have this conversation. You don't get to just say it's just art and then skate backwards out of the room.
Yes.
You know, like
yeah.
you're also a human being in addition to being an artist. But I am aware that there's sort of like a double standard, I think, when we talk about how violent fiction works when it's made by like black musicians versus Hollywood.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And of course, without going too much into that, you know, there's a reality of violence for many black communities. I mean, you know, Mercer's done songs like PTSD, and, you know, a lot of these people are growing up in areas that, you know, they're in fear of their lives on a daily basis, you know, sort of
yeah.
almost like a war zone. And so, I mean, there's a reality to some of that also, but you know, it's very
right.
complex. I think, you know, we're not going to be able to analyze it all in this conversation, but
you're right. And so that's from my take, right? Because I don't live in I live a half the time in New York and half the time in Minneapolis, but I don't live in really, really violent neighborhoods in either city, you know? So that's my take as kind of operating as a person who's safe, you know, and I'm
yeah.
sure I have a really different, sentiment about the whole thing if I'd grown up in, you know, Southside Chicago.
Yeah,
yeah,
totally. I mean, there's that aspect. And then, you know, Merce was saying to me that he also thinks there's a responsibility how one presents oneself, because if all you see, you know, black men in videos, you know, brandishing guns, and, you know, that's, you know, perhaps the only interface
yeah.
that a lot of white people see. So, you know, it's very complex. And obviously it's and he was saying, you know, for a white person to say anything like that, then they're racist, and if he says it, then he's a sellout. So it's, you know, it's really difficult to talk about in the right words as well, you know, to kind of have that conversation.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, you're afraid of saying something. I know that I worry about like trying to contextualize these conversations, because yeah, you are afraid, or at least I have felt afraid, and I sympathize with people who do, about having conversations like this, because I don't want to be so sanctimonious
no,
that I like
yeah.
finger wag, you know, at people whose lives have been really different than mine. At the same time, I do think that there's a place for moral discussion in art. So.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe, you know, art is a good way to do it, you know, which,
yeah.
yeah, it's perhaps less charged in some ways. I'd like to play 5 out of 6 from Chime now. What inspired this song?
Yeah. You know, as part of music making, I spend a lot of my time on the road. And even when I'm not touring, I travel a lot to clear my head from all the touring. And it struck me just how different that experience is when you're living in a woman's body. You know, a lot of travel books will have a section at the back that provides advice for women traveling alone. Mm. As if like, okay, well, there's the rest of the book. Here's all the cool places to see, right? Here's the food to eat, you know? And then like, oh, if you're a woman traveling alone, like, here's how you have to do it now.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And it just reinforced the idea that there are so many moments of every day that women, myself included, spend being vigilant, guarding themselves against
yep.
a bad thing.
Absolutely.
But until you actually yeah. count all the time you spend it, on it, you don't know how much of your life is devoted towards safekeeping.
Yeah, now I've really thought about this, so I know, and I don't think men have any idea that, like you say, you know, scores of decisions a day if you're out, you know, are
yeah.
based around that. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. So totally. Okay, great. Well, this is 5 out of 6 by Dessa from her album Chime.
Double jointed, triple thread. I'm not some method actress trying to see my descent. You're gonna have to play the tape backwards. Save that breath for choir practice. Got no time for my detractors. Standing on my staircase, all you are is a fire hazard. I've put my time in now. I'm vetted, uncontested. See how Nana Sansa shuts down? Motherfuckers asking trick questions. I'm out here arms wide, hiding nothing. I've done it all in broad daylight. And I left the cameras running.
I'm famous. I don't keep on see something. Go ahead and say something. I ain't afraid of it. I don't drown. We'll stay down. He finds a way to rise somehow. Skin the crowd is out. Coming out and I don't see too many rivals now.
I don't need an agenda. I just tell the truth, yo. Let it off the leash and don't touch it. It knows what to do. And I'm running a tight ship. Every deckhand here has a 5-year plan and an ice pick. They can ride cold, they can drive stick. I got an octave on you and a high kick. Don't blink, I don't block, I'm a bleeder. All I do is hit. I don't win them all, but I'd say I'd take 5 out of 6. Clock's running, better glove up if you insist. Okay, let's see who's really counting cool and who's been counterfeit. I'm the famous. Turning my fingers in the sockets, my daily dose of lightning. Just buzzed enough to get me climbing up the kite string. And my back is aching, my belt's too tight. I brought a chisel tip to this pencil fight. No luck, just fortified dice. I'm going morning and night. And I'm really rising. The fire on the horizon. I'm the phoenix and the ash. Red eyes shining in the camouflage. My secret is I don't keep on. Say something, go ahead and say something. I ain't afraid of it. I don't drown, won't stay down. He finds a way to rise somehow. Skin the crowd is up, coming out at night. Don't see too many rivals now. I'm the famous and the ash. Red eyes shining in the camouflage. My secret is I don't keep on. Say something, go ahead and say something.
Yo, You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my guest, rapper, singer and writer, Dessa. We just heard the track, 5 out of 6, from her album Chime. If you're listening in the Santa Cruz area, you can see Dessa live at the Rio Theatre on Saturday, May 5th. We're going to a break now, but join me for more conversation after these messages.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made dessert in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Daniel and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Can you imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my guest, rapper, singer and writer, Dessa. So, Dessa, I'm very interested in a psychologist called Alice Miller. She studied creative artists and writes about how art can potentially help people process difficult events, whether these are events they've experienced themselves or events they've witnessed. I'm wondering if you feel art can have a healing effect both on those making art and those experiencing it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've been careful not to characterize like my own process for making art as therapeutic.
Right.
Only, yeah, and although I know that at least one of the guys in my rap crew just rolls his eyes and is like, yeah, right, come on. You're just flattering yourself, and maybe I am. But for me, it's like there's some things you do to feel better or for therapy, and then there's trying to make art. And
yeah, no, I can see that.
Yeah, so in my mind as a music maker, those tasks have felt maybe related, but distinct. So
yes,
sometimes
yeah.
writing a good song feels like, oh, you know what? I'm so glad that I've finally been able to put in a brief phrase the complexity of that feeling, because it makes it feel settled in my head to name it. There
yeah.
are other times when it just hurts, you know, but I'm like, hey, this is going to be a good song and it's worth it. This is uncomfortable and it's not any fun to do, but it feels awesome to have the thing finished and I feel very proud of it and it feels purposeful. So grind away. As a music listener, yeah, I mean, can it heal? I don't know. It certainly moves me. I mean,
yeah.
I can imagine moments where I feel transported. And on the other hand, I can also think of a lot of times where I've replayed sad songs and I'm not sure if I'm healing. I'm certainly moved.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know though if
yeah.
I'm pouring salt in a wound or if I'm doing some hard
yeah.
work of healing. I think it's hard to say. I will say that as a performer, kind of the third category, maybe that to me feels important.
Yes.
Because it feels like a secular take on church or communion, like it, to feel the same way,
yeah,
at the same time with a room full of people, particularly if those people don't look or dress exactly like you. That's a powerful thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I can see that. I mentioned in the introduction you have a book coming out in September, My Own Devices, True Stories from the Road on Music, Science and Senseless Love. Your artistic life is very full with your solo career, Doomtree, running the label. What motivated you to want to write a book as well?
So quick sidebar, just to say that the label Doomtree is also the name of like the collective and the record label itself. Is run by my best friend, or I shouldn't say my best friend, one of my very good friends in the collective, named Laserbeak. So I used to be the CEO, but but he stepped forward and is crushing the game. He's a much better diplomat than I am. Anyway, I had wanted to write a book since I was like a teenager, and I just couldn't figure out how to do it. And now, you know, flash forward to being like a mid-career artist, I had written a couple of small collections, which you mentioned at the beginning, and we sell those like at the merch table at rap shows.
Right.
But I'd been working on essays kind of continuously throughout my musical career. So for me, writing lyrics and writing prose, you know, you're answering to different masters. And I like the fact that on the page, like you, there is free rein to digress if you're inclined, and the length is totally negotiable. Whereas in music, you've really got to have a pretty good reason to write a pop song that's longer than like 5 minutes, you know,
right.
By the time you hit 15 minutes, you're out of your mind. So, but in writing, you know, you can scale the pattern to accommodate the size of an idea. And so this is, I guess the short answer is it's been a lifelong passion, and I finally figured out how to do it.
It's described by the publisher as a memoir, and I was thinking earlier when you were talking about you know, the shrimp track and whether you know updating sort of parts of yourself, and I was thinking, you know, memoirs are interesting because, you know, they do only focus on certain elements, you know, that you choose to focus on, and you can write another one, you know, later, and it's a different part of your life. Is that something that appealed to you perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, like the writers that I most enjoy reading, the gasoline that they're burning usually isn't story. So it's like the books on my shelf aren't from a mountain climber who had a close call and has like this fascinating story.
Mm.
The books on my shelf tend to be more like from one of the writers you mentioned earlier, David Sedaris.
Right.
Like, I would just want to go grocery shopping with that dude because I think he's hilarious. And like, what are you, you know, like, tell me about this macaroni and cheese. What is your plan tonight? Like, it's the voice. It's the style. It's the metaphors as which he describes, like, daily lived experience. That's the stuff I really dig. And so I would say that's very much like the fuel that my book runs on, too. So what I'm not saying is, I'm a patently fascinating person with a page-turning life. What I am saying is I've lived in a tour van with men for most of my adult life, traveling to places that I otherwise would have never gone. Every place from like Shreveport, Louisiana, where nobody came to our show. And so we took everyone outside and just opened the doors of the van to play this music on the stereo and had a van concert in the parking lot, essentially. To Glastonbury, you know, like to play a big music festival in England. And I think living like in this really rapid fluctuation between regions, between the rich and the poor, you know, like playing a a fancy black tie gala and then a homeless shelter, like, having access to people, and because it's through art, people are willing to talk to you legit about their lives, you know, about the people that they've loved and lost, about what it's like to be a parent, about what it's like to have a, you know, in South Africa, let's say, after the truth and reconciliation, what's real and what's not real, you know, what Americans are learning from afar, how that country's story has unfolded after apartheid, like, so being kind of this visitor in other people's lives, I think, it felt like a collection of essays was a really nice way to package some of those stories, you know, so that they can each have their kind of little vignette.
Well, we'll look forward to that. It's in September it's coming out, is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You've spoken, obviously, about, you know, how much you've toured, and, you know, that's become even more essential with the way the music industry has gone in order to, you know, make a living as a musician. I'm wondering, with spending so much time on the road, how you keep a sense of yourself when you're giving so much to the audiences. And we're getting towards the end of the show, so it's probably...
I just my hands just flew to my temples unbidden.
You're like, am I doing that?
That's exactly what I was going to say. I think, to be honest, like, so, you know, we put out a record in February. It's a record I'm really proud of. So it's one that I'm happy to perform a lot, you know, because it feels meaningful. But I think when this long tour is over, like, I think I will have spent a lot of it down. So then I will probably, you know, go out to coffee with my mom and get teary, and then read all the books that I haven't read this year, you know, and I imagine there will be a little bit of soul searching to try to figure out what the next step is. In some ways it feels like you sort of hoard your health and well-being and you spend it all on tour, and then you have to go hunt new health and well-being after it's over.
Right. Yeah. But there's not a sense of like being a different person on tour. It's maybe just focusing on different aspects, or...
I mean, there's a sense of being an exhausted person, but I don't... I mean, I don't want to be disingenuous. I don't want to be perceived that way. But it is tricky. I mean, it's a good question, right? It's like when you're doing these really quick appearances sometimes, right? Mm. It's like I'll see myself and then think, God, you look like a, you know... Like you're being the weather girl from 1985 that you thought was so fake when you saw her on TV. Like, hi, you know, big smile.
Yeah.
I think it is tricky when communicating very briefly with people to try to be your fullest, truest self and also figure out how to be polite and approachable.
Yeah. Well, you are a performer, you know, so I mean, when you're performing, I think, you know, that's fair enough. You know, a lot of people take on a persona. Yeah. Right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to me. It's been really, really interesting, and we're looking forward to you being here in Santa Cruz. And if people want to, you know, follow you, what's the best sort of social media?
Yeah. On Twitter, I'm Dessa Darling, D-E-S-S-A, Darling. And on Instagram, I'm just Dessa.
Okay, great. And I'll also be putting up a podcast page with photos and information and links and information about your upcoming show and, you know, to your tour. So listeners can also go to itsquestionofbalance.com and look at Dessa's page and check that out. Well, thank you so much again, and good luck for the rest of your tour till you come here.
Thanks, Ruth.
Thank you. Well, it was wonderful to talk to Dessa there. I'm going to be going to the Santa Cruz show, so I hope I might see you there, Rio Theatre in Santa Cruz. If you're listening from somewhere else, then check online to find out where other tour stops might be. And I will put info on the itsaquestionofbalance.com website on Dessa's podcast page, so you can check that out too. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to you joining me again next time.